podcasting.
Who would have ever thought?
Oh, hi. Yeah, you just kind of caught me here. I'm in the middle of... Actually, I'm running down here to a local supply store to pick up some boxes that are fitted exactly to the two Jesse bags. Oh, I guess we better back up a little bit. So what's been going on? Well, rather than write a lengthy blog post and try to find some pictures and, you know, make it interesting, I'm just going to kind of ride along with me here and I'll kind of fill you what's been going on since the last time we checked in. First things is preparations, you know, health number one. The leg seems to be stronger. I don't have a noticeable limp. And, you know, it definitely the quadricep is still not nearly the size and the strength of the other leg, the good leg. But push comes to shove, you know, you've got to shove off. And that's what I'm getting ready to do right now. Hopefully headed to Bolivia here next week. You know, we've got all systems go on the leg. A lot of other doctor's appointments thrown in, immunizations, kind of make sure we're up to date on all of our hepatitis, typhoid, cholera, and anything else that could possibly be a threat from the health-wise out there. Checkups from the doctor, you know, my you know, general practitioner set me up with a refill of some necessary antibiotics should Montezumas or anyone else try to prevent play revenge on me, at least from a medical point of view. And a handful of syringes and needles, just because, you know, when you get out there and you end up in a unknown... a medical facility of unknown origin and unknown cleanliness, and they're interested in using a needle, I'd rather provide my own needle and syringe. That would be one thing. Other thing, certainly malaria pills, we've got that all picked up. I, you know, saw the plethora of other doctors, that dentists and these kinds of things, that, you know, just to get a good comfort level. That everything's coming together. So with that in order, we move to the motorcycle dock, which, as you know, is in the good hands of Jorge in Bolivia. And actually, the motorcycle's in Potosí, which is the town that I left from that morning. And you know, 4 or 5 hours down the road is where I had that fateful accident that caused me to be medical evacuated back here. Well. The bike made it back to Potosí in the back of a lettuce truck many months ago, and during that very rough and tumble ride, and as you know, that road is all dirt in various states of mis and disrepair. River crossings included, llama farmers and herders and anything else. Well, the kickstand, the side stand, broke on that truck. Now, fortunately, I do have a center stand, although as an aftermarket product and once fitted with the Jesse bags, it's very difficult to get a good grip and get good leverage on that motorcycle and trying to get it on the center stand. With it, without the Jesse bags and standard weight, it's pretty easy. But the side stand is, at least for quick on and off, is the preferred way to go. And service and maintenance, that's the best time to use that center stand, as well as when it's been parked for a lengthy time. And as those of you who know have been following this this journey, it's coming up on my 9-month anniversary since the date of the accident, which was January 15th in 2006. So we've got a new kickstand. As you may recall, too, the Jesse bags and my top case, the BMW top case that's for the F650, both had a little leakage problem. So I shot off the Jesse bags to Al back in March, and about a month ago, He got those back to me like brand new, all sealed up. There's some new hardware, new racks for the top, sealed, and I don't think I'm going to have any problems with that leaking. BMW top case I'd sent to the BMW dealer, and it came back, and of course with my, I like to call my garden hose or the Ecuadorian rainforest test, is it failed miserably. Water just poured in that thing like a, you know, sprinkler head on a golf course that's been knocked off by a lawnmower. It was just oozing in there. So working with the great folks at BMW of Santa Cruz County, they were able to get BMW to replace the entire top box under warranty because it had been repaired once in Guatemala City by the BMW dealer there, and then BMW Santa Cruz County had a stab at it when I first got back. But no, got a new top box, so that's going to come down with me, and hopefully I'll have no more rain problems there. Other things, you know, I've got heavy-duty tubes for the tires that you can't find good tubes down in South America. So I've got some really good Bridgestone heavy-duty tubes that will serve me well, I think, specifically on Ruta 40, or more famously known in the English language, Route 40, the badlands of South America that go south of Patagonia all the way down near Ushuaia. Desolate wilderness where wind blazing at more than 100 miles an hour causes motorcycles quite the balance challenge and lean skills, tactical lean skills, I guess we could call them. So we've got the tubes, new spark plugs, oil filter kits. I've secured some extra subframe bolts because I know that road has caused Jeremiah, who rode with me for a while. He sheared a subframe bolt off on that road. If I just keep an eye on it, make sure it's tight, that probably won't happen. But the rattling and the you know, constant hammering the and abuse the bike takes on those washboard and dirt rocky roads will you know, not only shake your brain loose, it's going to definitely do its number on that motorcycle. Well, the trusty and sharp shears or scissors of the medical staff in Tika Tika, joined in hand by Jeremiah, took their toll on my riding pants. So I've had to secure new riding pants in order to, you know, have good protective gear as I'm cruising down the road. I've done things like replace the face shield on the helmet. I've secured other spare parts that I can't recall right at this moment. And besides that, kind of re-going through the entire packing process. You know, the supply store is right here by the airport, so airplanes flying by. Listen, I'm going to run in and get those boxes, and I'll get right back with you, okay? Like an MP3 player, recorder. Okay, now where were we? Yeah, we were getting ready for the final departure. Oh, I should never say the final departure. For the departure. For the continuation. To finish what has been left incomplete. Other preparations for those that are technically minded or are closet geeks in the sense. There's a lot of technology that I carry on that motorcycle that doesn't relate to the motorcycle itself, which still with its fuel injection, anti-lock brakes, and, you know, I guess some would say innovative design. Not that it's not technical, but how we get this blogging, this photography, this audio and video stuff done is, and this GPSing done, is nothing short of a small experiment in early adoption in technology. Technology. It's just technology. Nonetheless, I've traded in the old PowerBook G4 Apple. As you know, I'm not necessarily technology agnostic. I do prefer the Apple computer platform for a number of reasons, but nonetheless, we upgraded to the new MacBook Pro with its Intel Core Duo processor, and it's running at like 2.16 gigahertz or some crap like that. But most importantly for me was the ability to run the Garmin map source program natively in on Windows. Now, for those of you who had been following, you will recall I did have Virtual PC, which is a simple little program that installed on the old Mac, you know, Motorola IBM-based G4 processors, and allowed you to essentially run in emulation mode Windows. The problem with using that on the last journey was if I was ever to transfer maps to the GPS unit that I use, it's a Garmin, I would have to do so using a serial connection. And we're not talking Cheerios or Wheaties here. We're talking a very slow, very old technology. This big, you know, I had to carry an adapter that converted USB to serial. And it not only added more weight and more volume to the load that I was carrying, it just was a real hassle. And the transfer rate, I couldn't actually transfer maps. All I could really do was transfer my tracks. And transferring those tracks actually worked, but anytime I really wanted to look at the tracks or view some of these maps on the old Virtual PC, because the graphics card was emulated in Virtual PC, it was just laboriously slow. Now, with Apple's new Intel-based computers, you can actually run a program called Bootcamp. You can run Bootcamp. That'll actually let you run Windows on your Macintosh. So now I've got the benefit of all that creative, great capabilities of Apple Macintosh, and with the nasty, unfriendly, and ugly interface with Garmin and Windows, you know, XP. You know, if Garmin did earlier this year announce they were making MapSource available for the Macintosh, yet they have yet to release it. And the other thing that has been very slow at Garmin's end was to update USB drivers. So the USB drivers are kludgy at best, and when working in Virtual PC, they actually don't work at all, which is why I was required to use that, you know, serial USB to serial interface. So now with this new computer, I not only have a faster processor, a larger hard drive, 160 gigabytes now, 2 gigabytes of RAM. I got Windows XP Pro on it, as well as Mac OS X, and I haven't actually interfaced the GPS unit with the Garmin software yet. But I'm on my way to a friend's who is who's got the Garmin discs. Unfortunately, my original discs were all put away in storage, so I have not been able to install onto my Windows platform on my Mac the Garmin software. But, well, you know, shortly here in the next 10 minutes when I get to his house, we'll put that in. I'll fire up the GPS, and I'm sure it's going to work like a charm. I've seen many experiences in some of the blogs on the internet here. So this is kind of what it's been for me for the last week, bopping around from here to there, picking this up, getting rid of that, mailing this, all in an effort to get on with it.
So shall we do it?
Now, still talking a little technology. It's savage to say that there were some plans I had for the website during the first leg. I always like using that to describe the first 21, nearly 22,000 miles of my journey. The first leg. I didn't really execute on as much of the video and the audio in terms of the podcasts. The podcasts, which still, you know, this will be our fourth podcast that you're listening to now. It became very difficult to do the podcasts because the way I'd planned to do it originally was to take the small Canon Optura 200MC video camera and use that microphone and record digital direct onto the DV tape. From there, I would input the, through FireWire, bring that audio into the computer and then edit it down and post it up to the website for the podcast. Well, not only did I not use the video camera to do a podcast, I rarely even got that video camera out. When you're traveling solo, it doesn't lend itself very nicely to taking video. However, with a more concerted effort, because of the few times I did pull my video camera out, I've been wowed by the fact that I can go back and relive portions of that journey. Videoing it and going through the motion and the hassle of doing that, I often thought, is this worth it? Is all this, you know, it doesn't even look good to me as I'm videoing it. But, plugging that into the TV later, months later, and I'm amazed that it actually wasn't bad. And unfortunately, if I had more footage, I would be able to put together a more cohesive presentation of the journey. So the video camera will still return with me, but I've added to my cadre of accoutrements and gadgets and weight, god darn it, for that motorcycle, is the new Roland R09 digital records an extremely high quality audio, up to 24-bit WAV files, and it also records direct to SD card. It records direct. Audio. So what does that all mean? It means that in something that's smaller than the palm of my hand, I'm able to go ahead and record a podcast, bring interviews in, bring the sights, well, you get the sights through the lens of my camera, but to bring the sounds now through these podcasts in a much simpler and less hassle and frankly a more fun kind of method. So you'll be happy to know that there will be more podcasts. And thanks to this new R09 technology, it's just the coolest little gadget that I've ever laid my hands on.
Somebody long midnight to call my old time used to be. Somebody long me down. I need to call my old time it used to be.
So when does this all, when does all this stuff come together? Well, let's back up a bit to where we were talking about the motorcycle and the bevy of small, the bevy of spare parts and things that that I needed to, you know, basically open up my own BMW spare parts shop here on that motorcycle, because in South America there is parts for this thing is non-existent. So, you know, I forgot to mention I am bringing new sprockets front and rear. Maybe I did. And as I said, the tubes. As I've got brake pads. I've got oil filter kits. But that's all said and fine, but when I do get into Bolivia, that motorcycle, Doc, has been sitting there. For 9 months, not once started up. So the gas in the tank is certainly stale. The battery is all but dead, and you know, those tires, you know, have kind of probably, you know, unlike a car that sits that long, I don't know if we get flat spots on those tires, but nonetheless, first thing I'm going to do is get a battery and drain the gas tank. New gas, new battery. Now what's going to happen is I've got to get to Potosí, where there is not much there, but that, except where Doc is. So I will actually leave most of the stuff that I brought with me in Sucre, because that's where I'll be flying into from La Paz. From Sucre, I will ride by truck with Jorge to get the motorcycle, install the battery, drain the gas tank, put the new gas in, and with much prayer and hope, that Doc fires up right away. From there, I'll ride Doc back 2 hours, it's about, to Sucre. And once in Sucre, I'll work with a, you know, local shop there where I can do some work on the bike and have them do some work on it as well. We'll install a new front tire. The sprockets and chain, I probably am going to wait, because I did just change those in Guatemala City, which granted is... you know, it was about 5,000 or 6,000 miles ago, but I've got a lot of life left on those sprockets, and certainly the chain is, last I recall, is looking good. Oh, yeah, hey, checking in once again here down on the, it seems I always get caught on these podcasts on the 5 freeway. But headed south this time towards San Diego, as the countdown few days goes on, but, amongst the other, complications and, relevations, innovations, and, extortations or some, some sort of stations anyway, San Diego International Airport, Lindbergh Field, picking up Mr. Tim Amos, who's flying in from New York City last minute to pull a couple corks and take a trip up to the Hollywood Bowl, where we'll see the former Pink Floyd legendary frontman Roger Waters perform, amongst other old Pink Floyd and Roger Waters classics, the complete Dark Side of the Moon. So, traffic's got me a little held up right now, but just kind of keeping you guys, you know, with a little bit of a blow-by-blow minute as we get ready to board that flight to La Paz and eventually Sucre, Bolivia, to reunite with Doc and begin the World Rider Tour. We'll check in when we get with Tim Amos, but things are coming together. I will give you that update. Yeah, yeah, 5 freeway, 405 freeway. I mean, we've got all these freeways, but we're real happy to have Tim Amos in town here. Just flew in from New York, direct flight to San Diego. How's the flight?
It was a good flight today, and I mean, we're in a unique moment here. It's actually the end of the freeway. Right? I mean, it ends. The freeway ends. Look, there's a traffic light here. This is we're in Southern California, or what? It's amazing.
It is because the freeway ends. I mean, you know, roads go, and we're just about at the ocean. I guess that's why it ended, huh?
Well, you got a little ways to go to get to the ocean. I mean, for my money, I want the freeway to take me right to the ocean, right to the. I want the exit. You should come off the exit, and your feet should be wet. Right?
Yeah, this is how it is in L.A., you know? You take that 10 freeway, and boom, you're in Santa Monica, right on the whitest beaches in the country. But in Orange County?
No, you gotta stop at Triangle Square, the Nike store, and the Borders, and, you know, and whatever else is going on here. But I guess there's the Goat Hill Tavern.
There is the Goat Hill Tavern, which we could stop in and visit.
Yeah, just for the peanuts, you know.
Yeah. And we have the right across the street, of course, is the other competition that now has become quite an enterprise. The Yard House.
Ah, the old, is it the old, O-L-E, the old Yard House?
They should, but they just call it Yard House.
Oh, look at that, yeah, Yard House.
Real good to have Tim Amos in town. Sorry we didn't get to chat with him a little bit more. The Roger Waters concert at the Hollywood Bowl, phenomenal. Unbelievable. So just kind of ticking off all the things that one likes to take advantage of here in North America and the United States before moving on to South America, where, as you may or may not know, but I look forward to hooking up with Jeremiah, who has ridden with me a little bit in Mexico and then in Peru and Bolivia, and was the outstanding surrogate paramedic, if you will, and rescued me out of Tika Tika and got me on my way through Medjeta system back there. But yeah, hooking up with Jeremiah.
I went and buy a gas valve. At first I wanted to buy a big one, but then I hadn't got enough money, so I had to buy a smaller one. And I think if I bought the bigger one, then it would have been the way I wanted it.
You know, Jeremiah is currently in Brazil. Actually, he's probably on the Brazilian-Paraguayan border right now at Foz de Iguazu, near the legendary falls portrayed in... The Mission, or the Robert De Niro and company. He's planning on crossing the bridge, which is kind of a no man's land. And as I've learned in Foz de Iguazu, there is no border crossing into the, customs or immigration crossing. It's kind of a duty-free, as I said, no man's zone. Jeremiah did end up in Brazil a couple weeks, maybe a week or two ago, but his temporary import permit, which he acquired crossing from Paraguay into Brazil back in March earlier this year, had expired. You see, going into any of these countries, you're required to complete, you know, fairly extensive documentation at the border, which includes the vehicle identification number, your registration. They want to see title sometimes. And essentially, they give you a certain amount of time of which you're allowed to have that vehicle in the country. Upon leaving the country, you've got to check that temporary permit out, which shows to them that you've been in and out within the given amount of time. Now, if you end up staying a little bit longer, the consequences can be severe. In some cases, possibly even in Brazil, they could confiscate the motorcycle or the vehicle you're driving. So it's important when you do get a temporary import permit to get out of that country. Jeremiah ended up leaving his motorcycle in Rio de Janeiro for about 6 months. He only had a 60-day import permit. So currently he is riding his motorcycle through Brazil illegally, technically.
So he's hoping to make a fast dash across this bridge where nobody will know he had ever stayed that extra time. Now, the complications for me, when I do arrive, my motorcycle has been in Bolivia for 9 months. My temporary import permit at the time was also 60 days. I guess the good news or the bad news is by the time I leave Bolivia, I will be leaving through a remote corner near the Bolivian, Chilean, and Argentinian border. This border is rarely manned. In fact, what they suggest you do is in the tiny little town of Uyuni, and for those of you following the journey, do remember, that was the destination on the fateful day where I broke my leg. And in Uyuni, there is an immigration office. You can have your paperwork stamped, and then you'll still ride, even though you're officially out of the country. You ride for 3 or 4 days in through the salt desert, down through the what we call the volcano zone, where wild pink flamingos dance in crystal blue waters of lakes, eventually to get to the Chilean town. I think our first town will be San Pedro de Atacama. Nonetheless, I will be also riding illegally, but I've got a little better shot because Bolivia is a more remote country, and I have got a letter from the embassy. Actually, as I'm sitting here right now, the letter hasn't arrived. But the embassy in the United States had promised to send me a letter so that at least if I did get pulled over or questioned by a Bolivian peacemaking officer, as we like to say, I would have a good story. I did break my leg and had to be evacuated. But that's the story. So Jeremiah is actually on his way to Bolivia, where he will meet up with me in Sucre. And once again, we are going to brave that same road I broke my leg on, which is not so much to brave, although some riders have called it a tough road. It obviously was tough on me, but I think the tougher part is going to be the border, going towards the border of Chile and Argentina. But that's the story right now. We'll be checking in, giving you a play-by-play, up-to-date podcast, photos. Hopefully we will get that video. Meanwhile, I'm trying to close up all the loose ends here in the United States so that I can safely make the journey and make sure I haven't left any gaping holes here. So stay tuned. It's gonna get exciting.
World Podcasting.
Who would have ever thought?